Okay, so last week we got through Exodus 1, which was the burnt offerings. Okay. Yes, I'm probably going to do that a lot at the beginning. Leviticus 1. I think at the beginning of Exodus, I probably said Genesis a lot. Yes, Leviticus 1, thank you. Okay, which was the instructions on the whole burnt offering. Okay, and remember we said that the first three offerings are offerings of worship. And that's why we can have offerings in Ezekiel after Christ in the new temple, because they're not all dealing with sin. They are all are related to sin because they exist, because sin exists, but they are not all solely dealing with sin. Okay, so the first three deal with worshiping God. The unique thing about the whole burnt offering is what? Does anyone remember? It's in its name.
It's wholly burnt.
It's wholly burnt, okay? Except for the skin, okay? But basically everything else is burnt. And Noah.
I don't remember that. It is de-skinned? I mean.
Yes. It says, verse 6, he shall then skin the burnt offering. And I believe later, when we get to Leviticus 7, maybe second half of 6, I'm not sure where it is, the priest who offers that whole burnt offering that you're bringing, they get to keep the skin. Okay, interesting tidbit. But yes, they skin it.
That way they can like sell it for things they need
That or make it into clothes or whatever. Yeah,
because they don't have time to farm a field.
Right, exactly, because they don't do that. Well, yeah. Yeah. Anyways, okay. So the whole burnt offering is wholly burned. We saw that you could bring either it depended on how wealthy you were on what you brought. Okay, so you could bring birds if you were poor. Okay, so the goal with the offerings is that no one is excluded because of their wealth, right? Not everyone can afford a bull, which would be the most expensive. Not everyone can even afford a lamb. Okay.
So that skin
Yes.
thing
Yes.
does not apply to the birds.
Correct. Correct. The birds are always going to be a little bit different
Right.
because birds are small. And so, like, you had to wash with the animal, right? If it was an ox or a lamb or a goat, you had to wash the legs and the entrails and whatever, right? Well, with the bird, you're not going to do that. But so you had to take away the crop. Okay, and its feathers, it says, verse 16. So the feathers were not burned. I guess you had to pluck the thing, but you're not going to skin the bird. Okay. Yeah. It's just a different part of the bird that animals don't have. Okay. So, and the result of the whole burnt offering was a soothing aroma to the Lord. Remember, it has not really much to do with what it smelled like, but that it was pleasing to God. He accepted it. And remember, whole burnt offerings were offered all the way back in Genesis. Noah offered a whole burnt offering after the flood. Okay. So this is not totally foreign to the Israelites. However, they are finally getting a system of how they can approach God. Okay. And how they can be in communion with him. Yes.
Because these offerings were like in place of person
Yes.
being
Right.
So it and it says that they are a sweet savor to the Lord. So all these things, the consecration service and
Right.
fellowship with the Lord is reflective of what we should be today.
Correct. And I believe last time, I think I talked about, where is it? I thought I did. Maybe I didn't. Where, yes, I don't know if we turned there, but Ephesians 5:2 and Philippians 4:18 talk about like our good works being an aroma before the Lord or our thanksgiving, something like that. So the New Testament also brings in that similar language referring back to the offerings, right? But now we're not offering an animal, it's our thanksgiving or it's our good deeds, whatever. Yes, Kate.
Yeah. Can you say
Oh.
Ephesians 1?
Did I not say that last week? Maybe I didn't. Ephesians 5:2.
Okay.
Okay, and Philippians 4:18.
Okay.
And let's just, I can turn there really quick. So Ephesians 5:2 says, walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Okay, so that's our walking in love is like a fragrant offering. Okay. And then Philippians 4:18. Go ahead.
I have received full payment and more. I am well supplied, having received from
Epaphroditus.
The gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God.
Okay, so this was a monetary gift. Okay, so the New Testament uses that same kind of fragrant aroma, soothing aroma, for our love and our good deeds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Yep. Okay, so today, we'll see how far we go, but we might get through 2, 3, 4, and part of 5. So we'll see. So we're going to start with Leviticus 2. This is the grain offering. This was an offering of thanksgiving for God's provision. Okay, most of the time it was offered with the burnt offering. And every day, if you remember, every morning and every evening there was a burnt offering offered. The priest just gave that. And with that offering, Numbers 28:5 says a grain offering was also given. Okay, so every day in the temple, in the morning, burnt and grain offering. In the evening, burnt and grain offering. But the people can bring a burnt and grain offering themselves if they want to, at any time they want to. Okay. So can someone read for me chapter 2, verse 1 through 3?
When anyone brings a grain offering as an offering to the Lord, his offering shall be of fine flour. He shall pour oil on it and put frankincense on it, and bring it to Aaron's sons, the priests. And he shall take from it a handful of the fine flour and oil with all of its frankincense, and the priest shall burn this as its memorial portion on the altar, a food offering with a pleasing aroma to the Lord. But the rest of the grain offering shall be for Aaron and his sons. It is a most holy part of the Lord's food offerings.
Okay, so first we see it's a grain offering of fine flour. Okay, in the Hebrew, that's the best flour there is. Okay, apparently there are different levels of flour, probably how pure it is or how well ground it is. This is the best. This is the top of the line. Okay, the finest flour. So God deserves the best. Okay, the grain offering we see is mixed with oil and frankincense. Okay, the oil probably helps it burn, but oil is also a symbol for joy, right? The oil of gladness. And then frankincense, this is the main ingredient in the incense that was burnt on the altar of incense in the tabernacle. Okay, and a lot of times incense symbolizes our prayers. So these both are mixed with the fine flour to be offered on the altar. Okay, and again, the oil and the frankincense, both of them probably help the flour burn too. Our prayers, because incense is usually representative of our prayers before the Lord. Okay, and frankincense was the main ingredient in the incense concoction.
Is that the same oil that they poured on Jesus?
It's what the wise men brought him at his birth was frankincense. Yep.
But they used that at the end for his burial, didn't they?
I'm not sure if it mentions it specifically, but they did use a bunch of herbs and whatever, oils and, yeah. Okay. So you take, if you look at verse 2, end of verse 2, you take a handful and it's a memorial portion. That memorial portion is from the Hebrew root word that means to remember. Okay, so it's just part of it. And it indicates the offerer is being mindful of God's grace in providing him food, or possibly God's rule over all creation. Remember, this is a thanksgiving offering. Okay, God has provided for you. He's provided grain, which is going to be your main source of food. Is going to be the bread. So you are bringing a portion back to God to say thank you. Okay, the handful represents the entire offering. And notice that all of the frankincense is offered. Okay, so when I first read it, I'm like, why are you going to want, because the priest gets the rest of it, right? I'm like, why is the priest going to want flour mixed with frankincense? Doesn't sound too delicious to me. But he's not. You don't mix it all together, okay, when you just bring the flour. So all of the frankincense gets burned up. What the priest gets later just has oil in it. Or maybe they're still kept separate, and then the priest can go off and bake it how he likes. I'm not exactly sure. Okay, but all the frankincense is offered to God. And then the rest of the flour that is not offered, the priest gets.
I was just wondering if frankincense is edible, so thank you.
Yeah, I don't.
It's not. we use the essential oil frankincense, and it's great smelling, but the taste is not good.
But is it poison?
I mean, maybe in large doses. I wouldn't say that it's poisonous unless you, like, drink it.
Well, yeah. If a little bit of the frankincense somehow got
yeah. Right.
No,
I'm,
it's not going to. No, it's just going to have a bite.
Yeah, but no. So the frankincense is all God's. So the flour, the rest of the flour, the priest gets.
Well, they would put the spoonfuls of frankincense on the table of showbread on top of the bread mm-hmm. throughout the week, and then they would eat the bread.
Oh, really?
Oh. At the end of the week. Okay, I know they ate the bread. I didn't know that they. So they actually put. Okay.
Don't quote me on that. Saturday or Sunday. One
yeah.
Of the
yeah. Okay, so again, like the burnt offering, this offering produces a soothing aroma to the Lord. Okay, end of verse 2. Offering by fire, a soothing aroma to the Lord means he's pleased and he accepts the offering. Okay, verse 3, the remainder of the grain offering belongs to Aaron and his sons, a thing most holy of the offerings to the Lord by fire. Okay, so the priests get the rest. Remember, the offerings is going to be part of the way that the priests eat and get their what they need, okay? Because this is their job. They are not given land. They are given cities. The Levites are given some cities throughout Israel, but they are not given land like the rest of the tribes. So this is going to be part of the way that they are provided for is through the sacrifices of Israel, okay? If we go to Leviticus 6, we get a couple more details. The way Leviticus is structured, which makes sense, and I told Kyle it's a little frustrating, is you get the first five offerings in the first five and a half, six chapters, but they're focused mostly on what the worshiper does. Then you get them again, and then it's focused more on what the priest does. So to understand the offering, you kind of have to flip back and forth, which is fine. It makes sense, but when you're trying to teach it, it's like, well, do I talk about that now or later? So if we look at verse 6, chapter 6, verse 18, can someone read that for me?
Every male among the sons of Aaron may eat it. It is a permanent ordinance throughout your generations from the offerings by fire to the Lord. Whoever touches them will become consecrated,
right. So this is talking about the grain offering, okay? And it says every male among the sons of Aaron. So this isn't even all the Levites. This is just the priests, and it's not the whole family. The priest doesn't get to take this flour home and share it with his kids or his wife, okay? This is only the males can eat it, only the priests. And if you look back up to verse 16, it says, what is left of it, Aaron and his sons are to eat. It shall be eaten as unleavened cakes in the holy place. They are to eat it in the court of the tent of meeting. So this is like their lunch. They don't take it home. They don't get to go share it with other people. This is just for them.
Do they get any of the meat or not?
They do. In the fellowship offerings, they get the meat, and which is the peace offering. Sorry. They have all different names, and all my commentaries call them all different things.
I don't know why you're confused.
So the peace offering, they get to eat part of it. And then, oh, man. The sin offering, they get to eat part of it. And maybe even the guilt offering.
I'm impressed that you remember all that you remember.
Oh, well, we'll see if I'm right when we get there. But I'm pretty sure. Perfect. Oh, that's hilarious.
We'll have to start practicing it. And then it'll
yeah, right. Okay, so the priests represent God, so they have a right to these sacrifices offered to God, okay, to the certain ones. So I guess that means they get part of everything except the whole burnt offering, The whole burnt offering is total consecration, total dedication to God. Well, and even in that, I believe they get the skin. So really, they do get, which you're not going to eat, but, you know, it can still help you.
You could,
I suppose. But then, I guess, this is just a random thought. Right, it's the worshiper that's skinning. It's the worshiper that's slaughtering. What if they do a terrible job? And, like, they don't do a good job skinning, and then it's like, yay, I get this skin. It's totally butchered. Anyways, just a thought. Yeah. All right, this idea of the offerings providing for the priest, this is carried forward into the New Testament. Let's go to 1 Corinthians. Can someone read 1 Corinthians 9, 13, and 14? 1 Corinthians 9, 13 and 14.
Surely you know that those who work at the temple get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar get part of what is offered at the altar. It is the same with those who have the work of telling the good news. The Lord has commanded that those who tell the good news should get their living from this work.
Okay, so this idea is there. In the Old Testament, the priests were provided for by the offerings. Okay, so in the New Testament, those who preach the gospel should be able to earn their living from preaching the gospel. Okay, this is why you pay Kyle the big bucks. Okay. And as a side note, this church provides for us very generously. We have more than enough, so. Right, and not put as much time into, yep. And there are pastors that have to do that. They have to work a second job, and I don't have any idea how they do that.
Kay. Something's missing somewhere.
Right, yes, exactly. All right, Leviticus 2, 4 through 10, we're not going to read, but these are all the different kinds of grain offerings that you can bring. And they're differentiated by what vessel they're cooked in. So if you look at it, it says, if you bake it in an oven, verse 4. If you break it on a griddle, verse 5. If you make it in a pan, verse 7. Okay, but basically the idea is the same. You can bring raw flour, or you can bring a baked good. Okay, and these are all the different ways you can break it and bake it. And if you bake it, then you kind of crumble it up with the oil, frankincense, and burn it, and then the priest still gets the rest of it. You don't burn all of it. You still only burn a portion of it. The priest gets the rest of it. Okay? Again, a memorial portion, just part of it. And again,
so they cook it and burn that portion before they bring it, and they bring separate portions?
No. So you bring your loaf of bread, except it can't have any leaven in it. So you bring your cracker, okay? And you've baked it at home, either in the oven or on a griddle or in a pan, okay? Then you come and they take a portion of it, a memorial portion, just like a handful of flour, so part of your cracker, and you crumble it up, put the oil and the frankincense on it, burn it. Then the priest...
had some oil or something.
Right, correct. Correct, but I think it says...
It's not frankincense, probably.
Right, you would... Right. Yeah, but even if you... So if you look at verse 5... If your offering is a grain offering made on the griddle, it should be made of fine flour, unleavened, mixed with oil, right? So you're going to put oil in it to begin with. You shall break it into bits and pour oil on it, more oil. It is a grain offering, okay? And we're going to assume, okay, the way the when they talk about the offerings, Moses will say something, and then in the next section, he won't repeat himself. So you have to assume that what was in the previous chapter previous paragraph in the same sacrifice carries on. So I would assume that you're going to put the frankincense on as well, even though it doesn't specifically say when it's made in a griddle. Okay. But you would still just do the portion, small portion of it, and then the priest is going to get the rest of it to eat. Yes.
Go back to verse 1.
Yes.
Of 1.
Yes. Oh, of chapter 1?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, correct. It is the Lord.
He's saying all the
correct. Yes, which this is, okay, and we talked about this before, why Leviticus is so important, okay? Because prior to even Mount Sinai, God really did not reveal himself very much to man, okay? We do know that he talked to Cain and Abel and Adam and Eve, right? How much we're not aware of because it's not recorded, but we do know when Cain kills Abel, it's God that confronts him, right? It's not Adam, it's God himself. And Cain talks to God and knows he's God and rebels anyway, right? And chooses to rebel anyway. But, you know, you get Noah, and we have God talking to Noah just a couple times maybe, right? And then you get Abraham, and God only talks to him a couple times through his life. Right? So we don't have a lot of revelation until we get to Moses. And then on Mount Sinai, God's giving him the Ten Commandments, all those laws about slaves and how to treat each other fairly in Exodus, right? Instructions on how to build the tabernacle, that's all from God. Then this is all from God. And the point is, right, we as sinful man have no idea how we could even ever be reconciled to holy God unless God reveals it.
But it is.
Well, yes, and especially the model. Right. Right, and the goal, I mean, the point, part of the point is, remember, we talked about Leviticus is a model. Okay, you are not saved through the model. The Old Testament saints are saved the same way we are saved, okay? And that's why we said you can follow the model perfectly and not be saved. It's possible, right? And we said the Israelites, they loved the model too much. And so when Christ came, the fulfillment of the model, they didn't want him because they loved the model, all right? But yes, part of the point is sin is a big deal. To be reconciled with God is not just an easy thing. So you need to be holy as I am holy. And that's part of the point of Leviticus is how do we be holy? Well, in the model, this is the way you be holy, which is a very complex process, right? But it should, when we study this, it should make us so much more thankful, right? That we don't live under the model anymore, that we live under grace, that we live after the cross and after the fulfillment of everything that we see. But I think when we see the efforts that the Jews were supposed to go through, right, to offer thanksgiving and worship to God, it should inspire us to step up our game, right? We have it a lot easier. We don't have to bring sacrifice, right? But then our whole life is supposed to be a sacrifice.
When, you know, when you go in, and you, I mean, it's not, this is like the guys.
Yes, right.
But then they've got the women, you know, for the feasts and everything, and all they had to do, and I thought, I would imagine, because from little on.
Yes.
I'll bet you that dad drug the sons along. Okay, guys, watch. This is how we do this.
Right. You
know? And mom, too. They're helping in the house.
Right.
So to give that up for this guy that comes along and says, I'm the answer, you know.
Right.
Let's think about this.
Right.
We got all this stuff. We're supposed to do this to be, and he's got, no.
Right, right.
I mean, it really would be hard.
It would be hard.
Or you look at, like, well, it wasn't for me, but I know for a lot of, like, Lutheran people or Catholic people.
The rituals,
get rid of the Advent wreath even.
Yeah.
You know, I realize that does have nice symbolism.
Right.
But the stations of the cross, the rosary, good glory. I've got people that are saved that were Catholic. They still got those rosaries hanging all over. It's like, why would you do this?
Right.
But it's the same idea.
Right.
Working your way.
Right.
Instead of just letting go. But
yes, it is always. Right. Yes. Right. It is always easier to do a checklist and say, and be able to say, I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this, than to, you know, say, no, everything I do is meaningless and I have to trust in Christ. Right. Yes, that is difficult. It is difficult. But the Jews, they did have the truth, and from prophecy theoretically, even from Genesis, right, they should have known that this wasn't the ultimate solution, right? That there was coming something better, right? Even from Genesis 3, we are looking for the seed to crush Satan. Leviticus is clearly not the seed to crush Satan's head, right? So we know from the Old Testament, we are looking for one guy. And they knew that too. They were looking for Messiah. Just Messiah, they didn't want Messiah to replace their entire religious system. They wanted Messiah to be a political Messiah and to conquer Rome.
Yeah, they were yeah. Earthly-oriented.
Exactly, exactly.
And we do that too.
Oh, and we do that too. You know, we think if we can just vote in the right guy. I was talking to Kyle the other day. I'm like, really, there is no right guy. They're all, I mean, you know, there might be varying degrees of badness, but they're all degrees of badness, it seems like, you know. So not voting in the right guy is not going to solve, is not going to ultimately solve our problems, right? We need Christ to come and set up his millennial kingdom. And even then, man will rebel. Even when we have the perfect king, man will still rebel, okay? Because that is the heart of man. So, you know, we look at Cain and we're like, how could he talk to God and rebel? Well, in the millennium, you're going to have Jesus physically here on earth and people are still going to rebel, yeah. Right? He is going to make everything perfect where if you die at 100, you've died young, you know, and man is still going to rebel, not want God. That is the heart of man. Okay. Good. All right. So you can bake it at home and bring your grain offering if you want. Okay, then verses 11 through 16. Can someone read those for me, those verses?
No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven. For you shall not offer up in smoke any leaven or any honey as an offering by fire to the Lord. As an offering of first fruits you shall bring them to the Lord, but they shall not ascend for a soothing aroma on the altar. Every grain offering of yours, moreover, you shall season with salt, so that the salt of the covenant of your God shall not be lacking from your grain offering. With all your offerings you shall offer salt. Also, if you bring a grain offering of early ripened things to the Lord, you shall bring fresh heads of grain roasted in the fire, grits of new growth for the grain offering of your early ripened things. You shall then put oil on it and lay incense on it. It is a grain offering. And the priest shall offer up in smoke its memorial portion, part of its grits and its oil with all its incense as an offering by fire to the Lord.
Okay, so here we get general rules for the grain offering and then the specific first fruits offering. Okay, so verse 11 and 12, you couldn't often offer up leaven, which is yeast, or honey. Okay, and if you remember Passover, you had to get rid of all the leaven in your house, right? And we talked about how this is a big deal if the entire nation is to get rid of all leaven, you know, at every year at a certain period of time, okay? But for your grain offerings, there was to be no yeast and no honey. Possibly because yeast and honey cause fermentation, which changes the offering. Possibly because yeast and honey were used in pagan rituals, and so God does not allow them because Israel is just to be different in every way. So we're not exactly sure why leaven and honey are not allowed, but they were not allowed. Okay, Leviticus 7:13, which I'll read to you just really quick, says, with the sacrifice of his peace offering for thanksgiving, he shall present his offering with cakes of leavened bread. Okay, so for the peace offering, it was a meal. Okay, so when it was a meal, you were allowed to bring leavened bread. Okay, you're going to have your meat and you're going to also have bread to go with your meat. So you're allowed it then. Okay, also it says specifically, verse 12, as an offering of first fruits, you shall bring them. Okay, so if it's your first fruits, you're allowed to bring leaven and honey, but in your regular grain offering, you are not allowed to bring leaven and honey. Okay?
I was going to say, could it in any way be referenced back to when they fled Egypt and he didn't, you know, he said, because they had to hurry and leave, and so maybe.
Right, it might be symbolic. Yeah, it might be symbolic back to Passover as well, okay? Sometimes we don't know why God said he what he does, but we do it anyway, right? And so, you know, maybe they didn't understand why, you know, bread is a lot better with yeast in it. Okay, tastes a lot better. But God said no, so you just do no.
Really, the one who's kind of getting shafted is the priest.
Yeah. That's right.
Because otherwise it's being burnt. Or
right, right. But with the fellowship offering, yeah, peace offering, they did get to eat leavened bread. I'm sure their wives could still make them leavened bread at home. Okay, verse 13. Every grain offering of yours, moreover, you shall season with salt. Okay, we haven't learned that yet. You're supposed to bring the flour with the oil and the frankincense, okay? But now we learn you need salt as well, okay? And you probably, salt would have been included when you baked whatever it is you baked, if you baked in the oven, the griddle, the pan, okay? But salt is a preservative, which is, it's just interesting that yeast and honey are not disallowed and then salt is allowed, maybe because one ferments, one preserves. But it symbolizes to the nation that the covenant cannot be destroyed. Because why does it say? It says, so that the salt of the covenant of your God. So God relates the salt to the covenant that he has made with them. Okay, so the salt in the grain offering is supposed to be symbolic. We do this because of our covenant with God. Okay, and this is not the only time that salt is related to covenants. In the Bible, where am I? If we go to Numbers 18, can someone read for me Numbers 18, 19? Numbers chapter 18, verse 19.
Of the holy gifts which the sons of Israel offer to the Lord, I have given to you and your sons and your daughters with you as a perpetual allotment. It is an everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord, you and your descendants with you.
Okay, so this is talking about the Sinai covenant. This is specifically talking to the priests, and then the context is the redemption of the firstborn. Right, every firstborn animal, clean animal, is to be offered to the Lord. Every firstborn son was to be redeemed, right? You had to pay the temple, okay, to redeem your firstborn. Okay, so this is what this is talking about. And it is an everlasting covenant of salt. So this was the covenant that God made with man at Sinai.
All the animals they had, how could they tell which one was firstborn?
You had to keep track. Or, yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, and the thing is, you have a sheep or whatever, and it has its firstborn. Well, that's only the one. It's not going to have a firstborn again. You know, so you just have to keep track of your new sheep that haven't had any kids yet, and then, or your new cows or whatever. Yeah. Okay, if we go one more, Second Chronicles. Can someone read Second Chronicles 13, verse 5? See, good thing we didn't wait for you, Joyce. Okay, 2 Chronicles 13, verse 5.
Ought you not to know that the Lord God of Israel gave the kingship over Israel forever to David and his sons by a covenant of salt?
Okay, so this is talking about the Davidic covenant. Again, salt. Okay, so why salt is related to covenants, I'm not exactly sure. Maybe because it is a preservative, and so it's these covenants are forever. Salt keeps things, so salt even keeps covenants. Okay, because back then they had no way to preserve meat except for salt. That was it. Okay, so covenants and salt. So this is why with your grain offering, you offer salt as well to be a reminder of the covenant. The covenant is going to be everlasting. That's right. Even in the New Testament, we're to be the salt of the earth. Okay, if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's good for nothing. Okay, then verse 14 through 16, we get discussion about the first fruits, grain offerings of the first fruits. So this is the early ripened things. Okay, so the first harvest of your grain. This is called out because this would have been at a specific time of year. Okay, you would have only offered this grain offering once a year because you only get your first fruits once a year. Okay, and grain offerings otherwise could be offered at any time. Okay. As a tie-in to the New Testament, in John 6, 32 to 35, Jesus is called the bread of life. Okay. One of my commentators, he said, as the grain was bruised and crushed to make the sacrifice for the ancient Israelite, so the living bread was bruised and crushed for all who would believe. Okay, so Jesus is the fulfillment even of everything. He is the bread of life. Okay, and they made this grain offering. It wasn't just flour. They could make it into bread.
Where was your cross reference?
John 6, 32 to 35. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, questions, Leviticus 2. Sorry, Joyce. You can listen to the first. Yeah. So, Leviticus 2, questions. All right, Leviticus 3. Okay, this is called the peace offering, also called the fellowship offering. I might refer to it as that. It's called the fellowship offering just because you have a meal, so it's fellowship. Like Abner said, this is like the church barbecue. That's what this offering is. Okay. So this offering celebrates fellowship man now has with God. Okay, it was not part of the daily offerings. Okay, the burnt offering and the grain offering, they were offered twice a day, morning and evening. And then whenever anyone else brought one. Okay, this offering, the fellowship peace offering, was required at Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks, if you complete a Nazirite vow, or when the priests were installed, a new priest was ordained. Okay, you had a fellowship offering. Or when somebody brought a fellowship offering, okay? But the first two are offered every day. The priests just do it automatically. This one is not. Okay.
Interesting. Only one out of the six, is it six feasts that they have? Only one out of the six feasts?
Well, a specific fellowship offering, if you think about it, Passover, you're going to have part of the lamb, right? You're going to eat part of the lamb. The lamb comes in to live with you. But it's not going to be sacrificed on the altar, mm-hmm. right? You're going to kill the lamb and you either eat it all your family or get families together to eat a lamb. You know, so there are other feasts that have meals, but not like this where part of it's burned, part of it goes to the priests, and part of it you eat. Okay. So Leviticus 7, 12 through 16 says it could be brought just in Thanksgiving as a Thanksgiving offering, as the fulfillment of a vow, or just a free will good offering, just because you want to. Okay, so Thanksgiving for something specific, or you've made a vow and you offer a fellowship offering at the fulfillment of the vow, or just because you want to, a free will offering. Okay, so that's why you bring an offering. Birds are not offered as peace offerings because they're not big enough to share. Okay, pigeon. There's not going to be much for God, the priest, and you, okay? So this is going to be bulls and then sheep and goats because there has to be enough to share. Meat was a luxury back in these days, and so this is probably the only time you ate meat, most likely, was when you offered a fellowship offering. Which, if you think about it, then the priests, they are... I mean, yeah, and I don't know if it would have been every day, but they would have eaten it more frequently because anytime, and maybe you wanted to be the priest to offer the fellowship offering, the peace offering, because then you got to have a part of it. Okay? Can someone read for me Leviticus 3, verse 1 through 5?
Sprinkle the blood all around on the altar. Then he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering an offering made by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys, he shall remove. And Aaron's sons shall burn it on the altar upon the burnt sacrifice, which is on the wood that is on the fire, as an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord.
Okay. So this, it's called, at least in the NASB, it's called a peace offering. Does anyone have something different? Peace offering. Okay. You have fellowship offering. Yeah. Okay. So it can be both. The Hebrew is two words. Zeba Selamim. Doesn't matter. But Zeba is the first word. It's from the root word meaning to slaughter. And it refers to an offering that can be eaten. Okay. So it's a different word than the other offerings. This one is an offering that can be eaten. Okay. True peace. And so then peace, it's a peace offering. True peace is a peace with God. Okay. This offering celebrates that. All right. We really only have true peace when we have peace with God. Okay. That is true peace. And so this offering is going to celebrate it. Male and female, if you notice, can be offered, whether male or female, because it's going to be a meal. Okay. So it doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl. Okay. Verse 2, he shall lay his hands. So just like the whole burnt offering, you lay your hands on the offering and then you slaughter it and the priest sprinkles the blood. Okay, so that's very similar to the process that's gone through for the whole burnt offering. When you lay your hands on the offering, you probably say why you're bringing it. You know, I'm bringing it to fulfill a vow. I'm bringing it because God blessed me this way, or I'm bringing it just because I want to. Okay, it's a free will offering. What is unique? Well, there are two things unique about this offering. One is it results in a meal. What's interesting is the meal is not even discussed here in Leviticus 3. We have to go to other passages to figure out that it was a meal, okay? Besides the language of what it's called. Okay, so it's a meal, but the other unique thing about this offering is that the fat is offered to God. Okay, if you noticed, it was very specific about the fat that you have to offer, right? Verse 3, the fat uncovers the entrails. The fat that is on the entrails, the kidneys, with the fat that is on the loins, the lobe of the liver. Okay, so all these different kinds of fat you have to offer to God. The fat represents the choicest part of the offering. Today we try to get rid of the fat. You know, back then that was the best part. It's the most tasty. And, I mean, we use fat, right, oil, to cook everything. Okay, why? Because it makes it taste good. So the fat belongs to God and had to be offered to him in sacrifice. Okay, Abner said that when the Bible calls somebody fat, right, it's never a compliment. And it's implying that they have stolen the fat that belongs to God and they have taken it for themselves. Okay, Psalm 73 says you look at the evil, right, and they're prospering. Their body is fat, it says. Okay, they look like they've done it. And to be fat, right, meant you were well fed. Back then, right? Most people were not fat because there was not enough food. But when the Bible calls you fat, that's not a good thing. And it implies that you have stolen the fat that belongs to God.
If you look at that along with other restrictions that the Lord gave about things that they could eat, and they
yeah.
could eat, that was a healthful thing
right.
for them.
Also, yes.
Because then it also says don't eat fat or blood.
Right, exactly.
So
yes, so there are a lot of the dietary restrictions were to set them apart from other people, the nations, right? And there's also now we know there were health benefits to them as well back then. So, but again, the primary reason for the restrictions were to set them apart as a holy nation, to make them different, okay? It says, verse 5, then Aaron's son shall offer it up in smoke on the altar on the burnt offering, which is on the wood, on the fire. Okay, so it seems like the fat is offered on top of a burnt offering. So either it was offered on top of the daily burnt offering that was offered morning or evening, or when you brought a peace offering, you also usually brought a burnt offering as well. Okay, so I'm not exactly sure. but it seems like it's offered on the burnt offering. Okay. Here there are no details about the meal, but it did result in a meal. So if you go to Leviticus 7, just a couple pages over, can someone read Leviticus 7, 31 to 33? Leviticus 7, 31 to 33.
The priest shall offer up the fat and smoke on the altar, but the breast shall belong to Aaron and his sons. You shall give the right thigh to the priest as a contribution from the sacrifices of your peace offerings. The one among the sons of Aaron who offers the blood of the peace offering and the fat, the right thigh, shall be his as his portion.
Okay, so this was the portion that the priest got. It's very specific, the breast, the right thigh. Okay, then if you look at Leviticus 7, verse 15 to 17, so just a couple verses earlier, someone read 15 to 17.
Now as for the flesh of the sacrifice of his thanksgiving peace offerings, it shall be eaten on the day of his offerings. He shall not leave any of it over till morning. But if the sacrifice of his offering is a votive or a free will offering, it shall be eaten on the day that he offers his sacrifice, and on the next day what is left of it may be eaten. But what is left over from the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day shall be burned with fire.
Okay, so this is talking about the worshiper, right, his thanksgiving peace offering, okay? So if you bring it for a specific blessing, you only have that day to eat it. If it is fulfillment of a vow or a free will offering, you have that day and the next day to eat it. And if there's any leftovers, it has to be burned. Okay? So Deuteronomy 12:7. I can just read it really quick. Deuteronomy 12:7 says, if I can get there. There also you and your households shall eat before the Lord your God, and rejoice in all your undertakings. Okay, so, and this is again talking about the free will offering, the peace offering. So there it implies that it's not just you, right? It's not just the head of the household that gets to eat. The household or your friends get to eat as well. So this truly is a fellowship meal, okay? In the ancient Near East, friendships and covenants were sealed with a shared meal. You did not share a meal with people you did not like. Okay? You did not share a meal with your enemies. And so here, God gets a portion, the priests get a portion, and you get a portion. So you are all sharing this meal. And it is symbolic that there is fellowship and communion with God and with each other. Okay. So if you look at Leviticus 3, 6 through 11, this is about sheep. Okay, we don't need to read it, but it's the same process as cattle. One thing that's different, which it was interesting, Brittany, your translation is ESV, right? Okay, your translation of verse 5 said something about food, right?
2-5?
No, verse 5.
Of
chapter 3. Read it again, please.
Then Aaron's son shall burn it on top of the altar, on top of the burnt offering, which is on the wood, on the fire. It is a food offering with a pleasing aroma.
Okay, so there it has a food offering. But then, where is it here? Verse 11 in the NAS says, then the priest shall offer it up on smoke on the altar as food, an offering by fire to the Lord. Do you have something similar to that?
In 11?
Yeah.
Shall burn it on the altar as a food offering to the Lord.
Okay, so in the NAS, verse 11 is the first time it says food. You have food elsewhere. Okay, so but under the sheep offering, it's implying that this is a food offering, as in God is eating a portion of it. Okay, this is not the only place where it seems like offerings are food for God. Okay, Leviticus 21:6 and Numbers 28:2 also describe sacrifices as food for God. But now we have to be careful. Does God need sacrifices to eat? Does God need to eat? No. Okay. So we have to, when we see this, we cannot assume, oh, see, God is just like all the other gods that needs a sacrifice to eat. No. The point here is God is partaking in this meal, and that is a big deal. Okay, God doesn't have to eat, but the point of this sacrifice is that it is a shared meal. There is communion between God and man, okay? Remember, the whole problem of Leviticus starts in Exodus 40, when God descends on the tabernacle and not even Moses can enter. So Leviticus is, how can man enter the presence of holy God? And here, God is given away, hey, I will even eat a meal with you. Okay, that is a big deal. Not only can man come into the presence of God, but they can be in true fellowship with God, so close that God's even going to share a meal with them. Okay? Psalm 23:5, Kyle preached on it and referenced it last Sunday, right? I will prepare a table before you in the presence of your enemies, right? God is speaking, right? And the table, he's going to prepare a meal. God is going to share a meal with you. Okay, Psalm 36:8-9 says something similar. So entering God's house is happiness and satisfaction. This is the goal of man, to be in perfect fellowship with God. And this sacrifice symbolized that man is in fellowship with God. Okay, so this was, the peace offering should have been a really big deal. Okay, because you get to celebrate your fellowship and communion with God, and you actually get to approach the presence of God, and God will share a meal with you.
Is there any knowledge of how often average people actually did this?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, an average person would not be once a week, because...
maybe the people who live closer might have done it more often.
Maybe, right. But I think it was when something big probably happened in your life and was brought as a Thanksgiving offering for something God had done for you. Yeah. But I don't know how often. But like I said, this one was definitely not offered every day, like the burnt and the grain offering, which were burnt morning and night.
And did I miss, does it say somewhere that there was even a minimal amount of how often they were supposed to do it?
No. Well, no, I said it was offered during Pentecost, at the completion of a Nazarite vow, and at the installation of the priests. Okay, so, I mean, your average Joe Schmo, right, would have only done it at would have only maybe partaken of it at Pentecost, okay? Because not everyone takes a Nazarite vow, and not everyone's going to be there when a new priest is installed, okay?
But you also said it could be for Thanksgiving. So
yes.
So when they came to the temple after a new baby was born in the family, and right, they came to
do the sin offering,
they
yep. They exactly.
They were happy for a new baby.
Right, exactly, right. And I could be wrong about this, but I seem to remember when Hannah, I think when she comes, and it's part of fulfilling a vow, when she says, you know, God, if you give me a baby, I'll give him back to you. When she has Samuel, she brings. And I think she brings a very elaborate peace offering because her husband was wealthy, you know. I believe that's right. I could be wrong, but... So she is coming in great thankfulness. God has given her a son. So, you know, circumstances like that would have, they would have brought a fellowship offering, a peace offering. Okay. Leviticus 3:12-17 describes this same process with goats. Okay. Possibly the reason sheep and goats are split out into two different sections is sheep. And I did not know this. Sheep have fat tails. Goats do not. And so,
what kind of
fat.
Oh.
And the only reason is because it specifically said that the fat tail belongs to God in verse 9 of the sheep. Okay? It says the entire fat tail, which he shall remove close to the backbone. Okay? So the tail of the sheep is fat. You need to offer that fat portion to God. It does not say that about the goats, because the goats don't have a fat tail, and so maybe that's why it's in two different sections. Instead of just saying you can bring a sheep or a goat, because a lot of times it'll say that, you know, sheep and goats are kind of lumped together, but here in the fellowship peace offering, it's split out into two different sections. Okay, verse 16. The priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar as food, an offering by fire for a soothing aroma. Again, food, all fat is the Lord's. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations and all your dwellings. You shall not eat any fat or any blood. Okay? So here it emphasizes that all fat is God's, and it says it's a perpetual statute. This is a big deal. Go to Exodus 12. Can someone read for me Exodus 12, 14?
Permanent
ordinance. So that those words, permanent ordinance, same as perpetual statute. Okay? And this is talking about Passover. So just as Passover, you are to celebrate every year, right? And you are to keep doing it throughout your generations. That same language is used about not eating fat, or all the fat belongs to God. Okay? Also, in Leviticus 16, 20... we won't read them, but Leviticus 16, 29, 31, and 34. So three times, this is for Day of Atonement. Leviticus 16, verse 29, verse 31, and verse 34. It says it's a permanent statute, which again is the same language, three times for the Day of Atonement. So the emphasis is put on Passover. The emphasis is put on Day of Atonement, which those are two really big deals in the Jewish calendar, right? Passover and Day of Atonement, that same emphasis is put here. This is to be a perpetual statute throughout all your generations. Don't eat any fat, don't eat blood. Okay, God has to have the best. Blood is mentioned here because this is the only offering that the worshiper eats. Okay, the priest eats other offerings. This is the only one that the worshiper eats, and so they're not to eat blood either, which I believe we had that command also in Exodus, right? The life is in the blood.
Since that's in the goat part, does that mean they only eat the goats?
No. This is for all of it. Okay? So all the fat of the peace offering, it's God's. Whether it's a bull, a sheep, or a goat, doesn't matter. Okay? And blood, doesn't matter. You're not to eat the blood. And that command is elsewhere as well. You're not to eat. The life is in the blood. Don't eat the blood. The New Testament equivalent of the peace offering. Anyone have a guess?
Once a month, communion.
Yes, very good. Communion. Okay, the Lord's Supper. Okay, this is a meal where part of the quote-unquote sacrifice is consumed, right? Where Jesus says, of the wine, this is my blood, and of the bread, this is my body. Take it in remembrance of me. Okay, and if we think about it, Jesus truly is our peace offering. It is through Christ that we have peace with God. And it is only through his death that we can have fellowship with God. Okay, and so just as the peace offering, I'm sure, was a time of great celebration for whoever brought it, you know, and they get to have a meal and get to commune with God, so the Lord's Supper should be, right? When we think about the death and resurrection of Christ, that he is our bread and our wine, that his body is the bread and his blood is the wine that was shed for us, that we can be made right with God. It should be a big deal. And we get to do it once a month. we should hopefully understand the peace offering will at least give some more significance to communion, which I think sometimes is just, you know, something that we do, but it really does have significance and represents our communion with God. Questions, chapter 3.
I did look up that
reference
to Hannah, and it in 1 Samuel 1, 21 through 27, the man Elkanah.
Yeah, her husband.
First, she didn't go with him the first time because she said, wait until the child is weaned, and then I will appear so that he can be in the presence of the Lord, dwell there forever. So then she went and she took, it says, she took along with her a 3-year-old bull. But then down at the bottom it says That could also mean three bowls.
Okay.
A three-year-old bowl or three bowls, an epaph of flour, which is 22 liters, and a skin of wine. And she brought them to the house, Lord. So it was a significant amount. But it was brought much later, because when they were weaned was probably three or four.
Four or five, yeah.
So
yeah.
It was many years later. That
right, but she is also fulfilling her vow, right, and bringing right. Samuel to right. the temple right. to be raised. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Good. All right, questions, chapter 3. All right, on we go, chapter 4. Okay, so this is going to be the sin offering, and this is going to be chapter 4 all the way through chapter 5, verse 13. Okay, so this we have a lot more discussion about than the first three offerings. Okay, the sin offering, this is going to be offered because of a specific event. Okay, something happens, you do wrong, you need to bring a sin offering. Okay, the term sin, guilt, and forgive dominate the next two offerings. So chapters 4 through 6. Sin, guilt, and forgive. These are conspicuously absent from the first three offerings, right? The whole burnt offering was said to make atonement, but there was no mention of sin, and there was no mention of forgiveness or guilt. Okay? None of those words have been in the first three chapters. Sin, guilt, or forgive. Okay? And remember, we talked about this before. Their understanding of sin was different than our understanding of sin. Okay, sin constitutes a violation of the covenant by a member of the Israelite covenant community. Okay?
Stop, please.
Yes. Sin constitutes a violation of the covenant by a member of the Israelite covenant community. It's a quote from one of my commentators. Okay, so, because remember, Matthew 5, 6 and 7, Sermon on the Mount. Jesus gives them a new understanding of the law. You have heard that it was said, don't commit adultery. But I tell you, when a man looks at a woman with lust, he has already committed adultery with her in her heart, his heart, right? Old Testament, you look at a woman with lust. They didn't understand that as sin. You didn't have to bring a sin offering. Okay? So, in their minds, sin offerings were not brought frequently, right? We think, I sin all the time, right? I would just live at the temple. I would have no more animals left. They would all be killed because I just have to bring a sin offering all the time, okay, right? And it's like, I'm in Galilee, but I can't even live there because I'm just at the temple offering sin offerings all the time, okay? They didn't, it wasn't like that. They didn't think of it that way. Sin was when you directly broke one of God's laws. So it was not heart attitude. It was not thoughts that go on in your head. It wasn't even losing your temper with your children, right? Because there is no thou shalt not lose your temper with your children command. Should be, but there isn't. Okay? So now, let's be clear. Those things were still sin. But remember, what is Leviticus? It's a model, okay? You were not saved through the model. It's just how God said you had to do things. So you are still saved because by grace, through faith, even in the Old Testament, okay? You needed lots of grace to cover over lots of sins. And the thing is, remember, God's revelation is progressive, right? They didn't have all the truth that we have. They didn't have the whole New Testament that talks about the heart, right? And that we need a new heart to be renewed even in our thinking. They don't have that, okay? So we have to give them lots of grace, cut them lots of slack because they don't even have the knowledge that we have. So when it talks about sin, bringing a sin offering, we have to view Leviticus in its proper context and not in our context. Okay, so their understanding of sin was different than the understanding that we have today. So they did not offer a sin offering every time they had an angry thought.
And there was a Day of Atonement to cover.
And there was Day of Atonement that was like the big reset button because this model does not work. Okay, especially when we get to all the unclean, clean laws, right? Abner said, he's like, if you have the Day of Atonement and then the next day a lizard runs over the burnt offering, then for the whole next year, the altar's unclean, and your offerings don't even count because now it's all unclean. All right? So the model does not work. The model was never meant to work because it's just a model. Okay? It's not really how you get saved. Okay?
So couldn't they offer if the lizard...
But see, they might not know it.
Oh.
Right? And so then they don't cleanse the altar, and so now the altar is unclean, and so now the, everything they offer on it is unclean.
But there were ways to cleanse.
Yes.
If that happened, and they knew it.
Yes, okay. But the thing is, how in the my question always has been, how in the world was anyone clean ever, or anything clean ever? because there are so many ways to be unclean. So anyways, but remember, it is just a model. So you could keep the model perfectly and still not be saved. You could mess up the model and you could still be saved. Okay. So sin, again, different way of thinking than the way we think about sin. Okay. So Leviticus 4, 1 through 12. Can someone read that for us?
The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel, saying, if anyone sins unintentionally in any of the Lord's commandments about things not to be done, and does any one of them, if it is the anointed priest who sins, thus bringing guilt on the people, then he shall offer for the sin that he has committed to a bull from the herd without blemish to the Lord for a sin offering. He shall bring the bull to the entrance of the tent of meeting before the Lord and lay his hand on the head of the bull and kill the bull before the Lord. And the anointed priest shall take some of the blood of the bull and bring it into the tent of meeting. And the priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle part of the blood seven times before the Lord in front of the veil of the sanctuary. And the priest shall put some of the blood on the horns of the altar and of fragrant incense before the Lord that is in the tent of meeting. And all the rest of the blood of the bull he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering that is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And all the fat of the bull of the sin offering he shall remove from it, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them at the loins, and the long lobe of the liver that he shall remove from with the kidneys, just as these are taken from the ox of the sacrifices of the peace offerings. And the priest shall burn them on the altar of burnt offering. But the skin of the bull in all its flesh, with its head, its legs, its entrails, and its dung, all the rest of the bull, he shall carry outside the camp to clean, to a clean place, to the ash heap, and shall burn it up on a fire of wood. On the ash heap it shall be burned up.
Okay, so the first instance we have is if the anointed priest or the high priest sins, what do you do? Okay? So that's this section. Verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. Okay, this is a new section because this is the same language as chapter 1, verse 1. Okay, then the Lord called to Moses and spoke to him. That's 1:1. Now 4:1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. So it indicates we have a new section. It indicates that these next two offerings, they're different than the first three. Okay, so it's calling out this section. Verse 2, speak to the sons of Israel, again, just like in chapter 1, saying, if a person sins, okay, this is used for the first time in Leviticus, right? And this, if you have an understanding of Genesis and Exodus, this should be a huge deal. For the very, very first time in human history, God is specifically giving instructions on what you can do about your sin. Right? Maybe something was given to Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, right? Because Cain and Abel gave sacrifices, but the Bible doesn't record it, right? We know they had some knowledge because Job offered offerings for his children in case they had sinned, but there are no direct instructions that we have in Scripture from God. Okay, so this is the first time in written revelation that we have, hey, I've sinned. I'm a sinner. What can I do about it? How can I be reconciled to a holy God? Okay, this is the first time. So this is a big deal. Okay. In chapter 4, verse 1 through chapter 6, verse 7, the root word for sin in the Hebrew occurs 53 times. This is the heaviest concentration of the discussion of sin in the Bible. Is right here in Leviticus. Okay, in Leviticus, the word for sin occurs 116 times. In the whole Old Testament, it's only 595 times. Okay, so Leviticus has more discussion of sin than any other book in the Old Testament. Okay, and this passage right here in 4:1 to 6:7, it's 53. So it's half, well, almost half, not quite, in just two chapters, basically, is half of the discussion of sin in the entire book of Leviticus. So this is a big deal right here. This is how we as mankind can deal with our sin. The Hebrew word for sin means a violation of the covenant. Okay, remember we talked about that's why your thoughts and whatever, your attitude, well, that's hard. Because your attitudes did matter in the Old Testament, okay? But you wouldn't necessarily bring a sin offering for a bad attitude, okay?
Wait, what was again the Hebrew word for sin? What was that?
Violation of a covenant. Okay, let's go to Judges. This I thought this was interesting. Judges 20, verse 16. Can someone read that for me? You're probably going to be like, why are we reading this verse? Judges 20, verse 16. Okay. Why in the world do we read that verse? These are the left-handed men and judges, right? They could sling a stone at a hare and not miss. That word for miss is the same word as the word for sin. This is where we get the idea that sinning is missing the mark. Okay? Because that word for miss there in the Hebrew is the same word for sin. Okay? So that they would not miss, not sin, quote-unquote sin, right? But when we do sin, we are missing the mark. We throw our stone at the hare and we don't even come close. Okay, we're missing the mark. Okay, but the idea is you are not living in accord with God's standards. Okay, so verse 2 again, back to Leviticus 4. If a person sins unintentionally, okay, and I have been back and forward on this and I still don't have it figured out, okay? About what the sacrifices, what they really covered, okay? But the word unintentionally has to do with your attitude and your knowledge, okay? It's to be understood as opposed to high-handed or defiantly. Let's go to Numbers. Can someone read for me Numbers 15, 27 to 31? Numbers 15, 27 to 31. Numbers. About what?
Unintentional.
Oh, it's to be understood as opposed to high-handed or defiantly. So they're opposite. Okay, so you either have an unintentional sin or you have a defiant sin. Okay, so that's Numbers 15, 27 to 31.
Also, if one person sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a one-year-old female goat for a sin offering. The priest shall make atonement before the Lord for the person who goes astray when he sins unintentionally, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally. For him who is native among the sons of Israel and for the alien who sojourns among them. But the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is native or an alien, that one is blaspheming the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from among his people, because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment. That person shall be completely cut off. His guilt will be on him.
Okay, so it seems like either you sin unintentionally or you sin defiantly. Okay, so when we think unintentionally, I think we think we have no idea we did it or it was an accident, right? But there it's opposed to defiantly, okay? So it seems like an unintentional sin can also be one that maybe you knew better, right? But you're also going to, when confronted with it, be repentant about and be sorry and not be defiant about it, like, no, I'm still going to do it my way. Okay, if you are defiant, right, then you're to be cut off, right, which could actually mean killed as well, okay, that you should end in death. Why? Because you're not going to submit yourself to God's law, period. You are going to defiantly do everything your own way. Okay, there is no sacrifice for defiant, unrepentant sin. Okay. The Hebrew root word for unintentionally means to go astray or to commit sin or error. And it carries the connotation of sin by accidents, okay? Or sins that are the consequence of human frailty, okay? So there is room for we're human, we're going to sin, okay? Later on in chapter 5, which we are not going to get to today, we're going to talk about confession and what that has to do with whether your sin is unintentional or not. Okay, but here at the beginning in verse 2, we have sins that are unintentional. Okay. Okay, so this whole section, chapter 4, verse 1 to chapter 5, verse 13, we're going to talk about the different people that sin affects, and the idea is it's going to affect everyone. Okay, we're going to start with the high priest, go to the nation, go to the leader, go to the individual. Okay, so sin is pervasive, it affects everyone.